The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
There are some areas where there's great cash-flowing rental properties everywhere. I mean, you literally, in some cities, can walk down the street and you can trip over properties that would make great rental properties. Every property, the numbers just seem to work. But in most of the major cities in this country, especially the East Coast and the West Coast, the prices are just too high and the numbers break down and it's impossible to find something that cash flows. Or most people think it's impossible to find something that will cash flow. My guest today is proving everybody wrong. He lives in Washington, D.C., which is one of the most expensive places in the country. And most people would say it's impossible to find anything that cash flows around here. But my guest today is doing it. He's been finding good cash flowing properties, and he's doing really well growing his portfolio. So I want to pick his brain. I want to kind of figure out what he's doing and how he's finding these properties. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds, and we'll talk to Rich Levine.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
This is actually Rich's second appearance on the podcast. He was here about a year ago on episode 82. Rich, welcome back. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. For anyone that didn't hear your first appearance, why don't you bring us up to speed real quick and tell us how you first got started owning rental properties?
Sure. I always wanted to do real estate related things. I was in some different fields in the late 90s and early 2000s. Fortunately, I was in the mortgage business, so I understood real estate somewhat and somewhat the financing of it. And around 05, 06, numbers didn't really make sense, but a buddy of mine called me up and he was buying stuff in Cumberland, Maryland, which is like a submarket that has pretty high yields on rentals. And the numbers sounded good, so I dipped my foot in and we bought a couple houses up there and sold them pretty much at the end of the peak in 07, 08. And that was my little foray into it. And then, of course, the financial crisis hit. And by 09, that buddy of mine called me up. He said, hey, there's some stuff in Herndon, Virginia that, you know, was $375,000 and now it's $150,000 and it rents for $1,500 a month, which I know the golden rule. If it rents for 1% of the purchase price in a decent area, that's a really, really, really good deal. So if it's $150,000 and rents for $1,500 a month, 1%, it's a solid deal. So I bought a number of places in Herndon and those worked out, you know, there was a little bit of a scary time, but they did work out. And then I started just buying more and more. And now I have, I think, 23 rentals at the moment.
And a lot of people say in expensive markets like where we live in the Washington, D.C. area, that it's impossible to find properties that cash flow. But it seems like you're not having the same problem that other investors are having. Like you're able to find good cash flow and deals, right?
Well, the word impossible is a bad word. I mean, nothing's impossible. You just have to find the right deals. You have to get lucky and find the right spots. Herndon was an opportunity, and I dove in, and I ended up buying 8 in Herndon. In 2012, I knew of an opportunity in Montgomery County where these condos had lost their FHA financing ability, which meant that the retail buyer was going to have trouble buying them. and there was a lot of different events that occurred in this complex, and I knew that they were really, really, really good value. They had gone from almost 250 grand to about 100 grand. And the reason for that dramatic fall had to do with a lot of different things, but fortunately, one of them was not distress. They had gone apartment to condo, and there was a lot of affluent investors involved, and just the bottom fell out. But it was not a distress situation where there was foreclosures everywhere, because these units were basically owned by relatively wealthy investors. Mm-hmm. So I happened to know that. I knew it, you know, it wasn't secret knowledge. Just you had to know people that knew about it. And that's what led to my second buying wave, which was in there. And that lasted about 3 years. I bought 11 units. And when I got into that mix, there's about 300 units, 200 plus owned by investors. When I got into that mix, I was on an investor email that they sent out, the management company, and that email accidentally CC'd every single investor on it rather than blind copying them. So I said, I just replied to all on the whole thing and said, if anyone's interested in selling, please call me. And I got a guy who owned four units. He had paid $1.1 million for them. I bought those four units for $380 from him. He understood the numbers. He was very smart. He talked to his financial people about it. It was not a short sale. He just, instead of holding on or taking the cash flow at the lower, he made a business decision. And I bought from him. I had another person a year later reach out to me, and they owned two units. They wanted $220 for them. I offered $180. I happened to look on the tax record and see their address, which was in Florida. I Googled it. It was a $4.5 million house in Miami. So I knew that money wasn't the biggest thing for them. They just wanted out. And it turns out they said, if you can buy it by the end of the year for tax reasons, we'll sell to you. So this was just a weird pocket of opportunity.
Yeah.
Since those two pockets turned in the condos in Montgomery Village, I've been buying onesie twosies, which is what your listeners are probably trying to do.
Sure.
And that takes persistence, and that, you know, that's a slower process, but you know, the deals are out there and they're not impossible.
So let's talk about how you're finding some of these onesie twosie deals. Like, do you have, are you looking on the MLS, or are you trying to develop relationships with people?
Yeah. There's a lot of people that are wholesaling properties. Even, you know, one of the biggest flippers in the area, Express Home Buyers, has moved into the wholesaling of properties world. I find that a lot of those emails and a lot of those wholesale opportunities just aren't good enough. They're certainly not good enough for flips, and they're barely good enough for rentals, but occasionally they are. So I'm on those type of lists. I'm on MLS. On MLS, I do searches, and I look for, you know, let's say I want to buy a single family house under 300. I'll look for single family homes up to, call it, 365, and then I'll look for ones that have been on the market for over 100 days. So perhaps that creates a scenario where there's a motivated seller, or perhaps, you know, whatever. So then I'll email the agents and just drop, I mean, you literally clicking the mouse on, you know, realtor.com or MLS or wherever. And I'll just say, hey, I'm interested in buying, blah, blah, blah. And occasionally I get a bite, and then communication happens and things go from there. And sometimes when you've been doing it as long as I have, you, people know who you are. So deals come to you organically here and there, which happened earlier this year as well.
You know, that's a good strategy, because a lot of my listeners complain that they have a hard time finding a realtor that'll work with them. Most realtors just aren't really too excited about working with investors. So you're not even necessarily working with a buyer's agent. You're just looking for deals and emailing the listing agent directly.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. There's no realtor in this world that has the time to really work with investors that have to fish for a living, which is all of us trying to buy rentals at the right number.
Right.
It just doesn't work. A lot of realtors, especially newer ones, will be eager to work with you in hopes of, like, you know, doing lots of deals. But the problem is when you're buying rentals and you're trying to buy them really well, it takes a lot of pinging of the other agents, or, you know, the listing agents. It's just not worth another agent's time. So what I do is I kind of do that on my own and take that work out of their hands. And then I have a friend or two that are agents, and when I get one that's pretty live, and when I say pretty live, you know, I might have somebody that say, yeah, we'll take 280, but it's a short sale or whatever. That's semi-live. I'll ask my friend or realtors I know to just whip it up, and I'll say, look, you know, I'll do everything from here. You credit back the commission, but keep $1,000, and this deal will work. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've had friends that have done that for me, and they make $1,000 just, you know, typing up a contract for 15 minutes, and I handle all the rest.
Right.
You have to avoid putting it in their hands until it's ready, though, because mm-hmm. otherwise you are wasting their time. Or it's as close to ready as possible.
And now, when you're buying these houses, so when you're making offers, you're not touring the house. You're just trying to throw out a bunch of offers and hoping that something's going to stick. Do you just kind of estimate that the house is probably going to be in bad shape and just go really low on your offer so that if you run into some problems, you have a buffer
not,
there?
Not necessarily. I kind of hope that I can do paint and carpet type of thing because I'm not trying to renovate the houses top to bottom. I just need them to be livable and clean. So I'm trying to balance that by coming out at an offer price that is low enough that my numbers can make sense, but high enough that I'm not just really, really, really lowballing. And so then I basically say, yeah, it's non-contingent, but I have a 5-day right to inspect. I say, you know, non-contingent in the term of, you know, financing, you know, it's a cash offer, close quickly, blah, blah, blah. But I do have the 5-day right to inspect. I put in the contracts, and that's when I go check them out. And, you know, if the house is dilapidated and the numbers don't work, you know, I have a kickout clause. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and those get used here and there. But generally speaking, the houses I go after, if they're absolutely dilapidated, it's known in the listing or the pictures really, you know, we'll say cash or hard money only or something like that. Then you know that you're dealing with a different number to make the house right.
Right.
So, you know, the paint and carpet side of the world might be 15, 20 grand, but the renovation side might be 30, 40, 50, or even higher to get it in livable condition.
So a property that maybe had a 1970s kitchen and bathroom, would you consider something like that? Or are you looking for something that is more updated?
I would totally consider that.
Okay.
I mean, last time I checked, a countertop from 1970 held a plate the same way one from 2017
right,
does.
Right.
It just has to be clean. It can't be disgusting. But, you know, my mom has a squeaky clean house. She bought in 67 and her kitchen isn't all that much newer. But, you know, it's just, you know, if it's functional and it's livable and it's fine, you can always replace appliances. You can always, you know, if it's disgusting and it's, you know, it's filth ridden and all that, you have to obviously replace
right,
and do a lot of other
right.
stuff.
Rich, I want to talk to you about how you're finding and managing your contractors. And also I want to talk to you about how you're helping other investors with the BRRRR strategy. If anyone isn't familiar with the BRRRR strategy, that's a way that you can buy rental properties using none of your own money or very little of your own money, where you buy a property, you rehab it, you rent it out, you refinance and repeat. So let's take a real quick break. We'll get a word in from Realty Shares, and then we'll come back and we'll dive right back into the interview.
Not an offering of securities. Private investments are highly illiquid and risky and are not suitable for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Securities offered to accredited investors through North Capital Private Securities. Member FINRA SIPC.
If you're looking to build more streams of passive income, Realty Shares is a great way to do it. That's Realty Shares, spelt REALTY shares. Let me tell you the way Realty Shares work. So let's say there's 100 investors and each one of them have $5,000. So they've got $5,000 times 100, that's $500,000. So Realty Shares will take that money and then they'll invest it into a real estate deal with the goal being to make you money. Now, this is really neat because it's so passive. It's so simple. You don't need to go out there and try to find deals. And if you've been doing this for a while, you know that it takes a ton of time to go out there and find deals. And then once you find it, you've got to do due diligence and home inspections and make sure that everything is solid with the deal. The good thing with Realty Shares is they take care of all this for you. They've got people out there that are sourcing deals all day. They've got a team of people that are writing up detailed due diligence. So as an investor, you can log on to the website. You can look through all their investments. You can read all the due diligence and find a deal that makes sense to you. And if it makes sense, you can invest right there from your phone or from your computer. Really, really simple. If you want to check it out, it's totally free to sign up. There's no commitment. You can just go to realtyshares.com/rental. And right now, Realty Shares has a special offer just for our listeners. If you go to realtyshares.com/rental, you can get $100 towards your first investment. That's Realty Shares, spelled realtyshares.com/rental, for $100 towards your first investment. realtyshares.com/rental. All right, Rich, let's get back to the show. So tell me, when you find a house, is it hard for you to find good contractors to do the work for you?
I've always found the contractor side of it to be the more challenging part of my equation. There's kind of three pieces of a deal, which is the capital side, the deal itself, and the construction side. And I've had a good contractor for many years, and that's made my life pretty easy. But he's gotten busier, and his prices have gone up. But I trust him implicitly. Like, he knows what I need it to look like. I can say I want it to be rental ready. He knows what to put in. I'm not running to Home Depot. I'm not doing anything, any of that stuff. So, but there are challenges with, you know, sometimes he gets very busy. Sometimes his price is higher than I want it to be. But I wish I could snap my fingers and just have construction done easily. People say it's a commodity and there's a million contractors out there, but I'm not going to be the guy that, you know, gets screwed over by a contractor, right, which happens all the time. So it's a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be careful. I mean, there's so many bad contractors out there. How about paying them in advance? A lot of times they want some money before work, before they do any work. Is there like a rule of thumb on how much you'll give them before they start the work?
You know, my guy, I know and trust, and I normally give him, you know, 10,000, you know, off the bat to start a project. Let's call it, you know, 30, 40, 50, just to get him going, because mm-hmm. I know he's not running away. I know there's not a problem.
Right.
But in my other line of work, in the financing side, I do a lot of draws to contractors. So I've got a pretty good eye for where they're at and what's going on. So as long as you're not putting the money too far ahead of them, you're fine. But, you know, some contractors want a third, a third, a third. So a third up front, a third, you know, when they get going, and a third at the end. The end part's not the problem. It's the first or second third. And, you know, look, they can always run out of town. They can do different things. And that can be a lot of money if you're doing the 50K renovation. They want 17K up front and they go in, do demo, and then you never see them again. That's a hit.
Right.
I've been pretty lucky. I kind of draw in small batches to my contractors, you know, 5, 10, maybe 15 at the max.
Mm-hmm.
I keep track of it. And the beauty of things is with an iPhone and these smartphones, you can get pretty up-to-date processing of job sites without having to be on them every second
right.
of the day.
So how do you work that? Do you just tell them, hey, before you give me a draw, I'm going to need you to send me some pictures of where you're at? Okay. Okay.
Yep.
That's
exactly what I do.
That's good. All right. Let's talk about some of your properties, because you've worked out some pretty good deals recently. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the deal that you found around Christmas time.
I was searching pretty hard around, you know, late fall, early winter. And I came across one in a target area that I like, in Wheaton, Silver Spring type of area of Montgomery County. And I know that those houses in this particular neighborhood rent for about $2,000 to $2,400. And this was a slightly bigger split level. So I liked the house, the general appearance, and the location. It was listed for $365 and it had been on the market for about 40 days. The listing said to call the owner. I had clicked the tax record. The owner had been there for 50 years. The number listed for the owner was incorrect. Mm. So here it is, about 3 days before Christmas. I noticed this. It's still active. So I emailed the agent. She was from another county and wasn't really that on the ball with this house. And I said, look, I can't get a hold of the seller. I'm interested in buying it. She said, well, what do you want to pay? I'm like, look, I'm an investor. I'll pay $310. And that it was listed at $365. I knew I couldn't lowball with a two number on this particular house. But I was going to write it at $310 with a friend of mine writing it for me and really kind of be into it for around $300. The pictures made it look pretty clean, and I knew it could rent for around $2,400. I liked the numbers, and I wanted to buy the house. So she calls me back a day or two after Christmas and says, you know, look, I talked to the owner. We can make $310 work. I'll write it up for you now. I said, no. I can't have you write it. You know, if you write it, I have to have it written at $300 because I'm utilizing that commission to get to my mm-hmm. target number. So she says, okay, yeah, just write it up. So we write it up. And she was meeting with the seller who was, you know, a little bit older and kind of, you know, kind of having her hand held, which was fine. And she calls him back. She's like, look, we've signed it, but we see that there's an inspection clause. This is January 2nd. They call me back with that. I said, yep. She said, can you come and look at it right now? I said, sure. So I go and I look at the house, and I thought it was clean, but I thought it might need, you know, I was hoping 10 or less. And I went and looked at it, and it needed nothing. It was spotless. Wow. It was clean. I mean, it could always use something. I mean, that, sure. the facade on the outside was green, but I wasn't going to paint it. The green was fine, you know. Yeah. So that's how that one came about, and I got a renter in it very quickly.
Wow. So do you think no one else had even seen that property, even though it had been sitting there for so long because of the wrong phone number in the listing?
I think that it's a location where a lot of people want to live. I think that sometimes you have agents that somehow hinder a deal, maybe by accident, maybe because they're just simply negligent, maybe they're just don't care. I don't know the yeah. reasons, but this was one of those scenarios, and I lucked out, you know, and yeah. it was only from persistence, you know, of emailing and kind of talking to them. And the house appraised as is for $373. I bought it all in for about $304 with the taxes and transfer and this and that. And,
that's great.
It's a great house. And I got a renter in there that's great. They're on ACH, auto pay, and the rest is history.
Wow. Now, do you have most of your tenants on ACH?
Well, I have the stuff in Herndon is managed by that partner I mentioned, and that he manages that, and then they basically do a report and a deposit once a month. The stuff in Montgomery Village, the 11 condos, are with a management company, and I get full reports and a wire once a month. The stuff I manage, which are four or five single-family homes in Montgomery County, I offer a discount up front if they'll do ACH because it just makes my life so much sure. easier. So all of them are on ACH except one for whatever reason, that house. I mean, we can kind of get into that scenario, but that's a multi party type of house. And they have to pay from their checking account and okay. they don't have ACH.
How much of a discount do you offer the tenants for doing ACH?
I kind of feel it out, you know. If my target's $2,300 a month and I'm asking $2,350, then I'll give a $50 discount for okay. them to do ACH, and I'll arrive at my target. But the ACH is really valuable. The mm-hmm. tenants that went into the one that I bought around Christmas time, they actually came through a banking relationship that I have, and that relationship I made sure that she kind of conveyed to them that they'd get a discount. They were a Hispanic couple, so they didn't speak perfect English. So I had a friend who kind of interpreted, and they were great people. And they were more cash under the pillow type people than bank accounts, but they set it up. They did what they had to do, and everything's perfect. And they're on ACH, so that's been great.
Yeah, that's a win-win. I mean, they get a discount, yeah. and your life is easier not having to track them down to get rent checks
exactly.
every month. So. That's awesome.
I got real lucky with them as a side note because the husband is a property maintenance like supervisor at a big apartment complex. So little things that go wrong in the house, in my house, he's happy to fix. And occasionally, if anything goes wrong and it requires like more than, you know, a screwdriver or a hammer or whatever, I'll kick them a few dollars. Like, we want to replace this gutter. It's falling off. You know, it's $80. Sure, take $100 off rent. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or I'll send you $100. It's worked out really great because they're right. improving my house.
That's perfect.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, Rich, nice. Thank you so much for coming back on the show and updating us on what you've been doing. If anyone is flipping houses in the Washington, D.C. area, Why don't you tell us about your company and how you can help them with funding their deals?
Oh, sure. My main business is called Greenbrier Lending, and you can go to greenbrierlending.com. And what we do is we fund investors that are flipping houses. We also provide financing to investors that are buying and holding. You know, we get paid off typically on the flip because the house is selling rather quick. On a rental side of it, you know, you have to be in a scenario where you can refinance out of our loan, but we can certainly help people and are happy to discuss deals anytime. You know, deals are what I do for a living. I love looking at all of them, whether I'm involved or not. So I'm happy to always chat about deals. My email is rich@greenbrierlending.com, or people can look on the site. My phone number's on there. We are local to the DC, Maryland, Virginia markets. So unfortunately we're not nationwide, but still I'll talk about deals. I'm always happy to discuss anything if anybody has a question.
Rich is a really valuable resource. You know, from what Rich just said there is that if you find a deal that you're going to fix up, you're going to rent out and then refinance. So the BRRRR strategy that we've talked about on the show before, if you're looking to do that, Rich will fund you the money up front to buy the property. Rich, will you also fund the rehab money?
Yeah, we can. I mean, in any deal, there's going to need to be skin in the game. I mean, most of our borrowers are bankable in some sense. I don't want to create a false impression.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, you find a rental, just here you go, here's all the money. But if the deal makes sense and the borrower makes sense and everything makes sense, a lot of times what happens to your listeners is they'll find a good deal. It needs a good amount of work. Although your listener is very bankable, the house might not have a kitchen, and therefore it's not even Fannie financeable or FHA. It's not conventionally financeable. So they need another funding source if they're not going to pay cash. And that's where we enter the equation. We're still going to protect ourselves and be at the right loan to value, but we can close in a matter of days and deals get done. And when you are an investor, you have to have different resources, and those are resources in contract, and those are resources in financing, those are resources in finding deals. Mm-hmm. Just more and more friends or realtors that know you, things happen organically. So that's what we do. We've funded a lot of rental property over the years. It's not our main thing, but it's not something we don't do. So it's worth a call,
right?
Always.
Yeah. For anyone that's looking to do the BRRRR strategy in the Virginia, Maryland, DC area, you definitely want to look up Rich because he is definitely a good resource to fund your deals. Rich, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
If you missed Rich's contact information, you can look it up on my website. It's at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode122. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.